Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, our news roundup discusses several big TV cancellations and Megan Boone departing the blacklist, reviews of The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard and Infinite, and our topic this week is reality TV. Love it or hate it? I hate it. We're going to debate it. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And Troy Heinrich from The Blacklist Exposed. Troy?
What's up, everybody?
Kind of funny, you're going to be here and there's some big Blacklist news, so that's good.
What? I didn't see any of that stuff today.
Yeah. We didn't hear about that at all. Troy is my the host of The Blacklist Exposed. I am his co-host. And if you are looking for John Davenport, who hasn't been here in a little bit, he's on sabbatical. Not sure when he's coming back, but we'll let you know when we do. He's got stuff going on, so he'll be back eventually. I think, maybe. I don't know. But Troy is here in his stead. So thanks for joining us, Troy, and thanks for helping out. I appreciate it.
I am happy to throw my weight around when I need to.
All right, a random question before we get into our movie and TV discussion. Do you think movie theaters should post whether or not a movie has an after credit scene? There's a meme or tweet or whatever floating around that's becoming pretty popular where some theaters are doing this. And I'm kind of curious if you guys think that would be a good idea instead of having to, you know, search for it and find out if there's an after credit stinger. Would you like that if theaters had that?
I would love it personally, but I know that there are some people who consider it a spoiler in some respect. I don't feel that way because when I get to the end of the movie and the credits start rolling, one of the first things I'm going to do is ask the people around me, do you know if there's something after? And then if they don't know, I'm going to Google it. So I'm already looking for it anyway.
How is it a spoiler? Like, that's a serious question. I've seen that. I've seen that argument. And I'm like, a spoiler is when here's what happens. Ha, ha, ha. Now you know. I wouldn't consider a spoiler knowing that something happens. That's just helpful information. So I don't have to sit through 8 minutes of people's names that, granted, I appreciate their work, but I don't need to see it. I have to pee.
I think that comes down to how... like what somebody considers a spoiler, because some people will maybe see any information that they wouldn't have otherwise known from the trailer as being a spoiler. I don't consider it a spoiler. I consider, you know, something that's pertinent to the movie itself, a funny scene or, you know, a plot or a surprise character or something like that. And if I don't know what is happening in the after or mid-credit scene, then it's not a spoiler to me. I've gotten so accustomed to some movies having it and some not having it. So it's not a big deal to me.
I think that it's definitely not a spoiler just to say like, hey, this movie has something after the credits roll. I mean, you could just go to aftercredits.com and literally look it up in like 2 seconds. So from a posting perspective of should the movie theater have some kind of disclaimer about it? No, I don't think so.
Not necessarily a disclaimer. Just do you think that would be nice?
Announcement or a warning or a, you know, hey, hang, the movie's done. You should be sitting there watching the credits anyway, if you're a movie person, because you should be appreciating all the people that went into it, regardless of their stuff or not.
You son of a bitch.
You stay all the way to the end when it says, you know, general motion picture property, and then it switches to the studio, and then you leave when there's no more sound.
You totally just said that because I just said I don't do that. And now you're like, now I feel bad. And that's a guilt trip. I feel like my bags are packed and we're on a guilt trip.
That's right.
Now.
You are like, go buy your popcorn, shove it in your hole before the movie even starts. I'm the one that's like, savor that popcorn, that little 2 or 3 kernels at the bottom, and appreciate all the soundtrack that was in the show, especially in The Heights, because it was fabulous. We did it. When I saw the soundtrack actually roll on in The Heights, I did stand up, walk to the exit, but I planted myself in the exit itself because I knew there was going to be something and I didn't actually look it up. And I stood there and waited. And of course there was. And it was super sweet. And I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. See, I didn't know that until I saw that meme floating around. And I'm like, oh, there was more? Crap. I didn't look for that one. I just assumed it was over. It felt like a really good conclusion. But then there is a little extra at the end of In the Heights.
And it's funny as hell.
It is pretty funny.
Adorable. Yeah.
Very well done. Nice callback, too, to the movie.
Yes.
I just know that when I go see a movie, I'm always looking that up. And let's be honest, the whole point of life anymore is to make us as lazy as humanly possible. So the less things I got to look up, the happier my day is. It would be nice if I didn't have to. That's all I'm saying.
Well, then on every Thursday, I'm going to put a little note on my computer that says, go to aftercredits.com, take a screenshot of the bottom of the page and send it to Aaron so he can be as lazy as he wants to be.
Can you send that to me too?
Yeah, sure. We'll get you an email list. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that might want to join.
We'll just post it in the whole group. That way everybody will have it.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to do that because some people might see it as a spoiler.
Oh. No, it's not a spoiler. Actually, I'm literally looking at it right now. It just says after credits, these movies have stingers after the credits, and it just lists the movies.
Exactly.
Doesn't tell you where in the credits, when in the credits, how in the credits. It just says that there is something to stay for.
It's not like Samuel L. Jackson showed up at the end, you know, and it's not like that. It's just, no, there's something here. Hang out.
It just says In the Heights has something after the credits. Stick around.
But now we're going to spoil it. No, I'm just kidding. Now we're going to go to our news roundup. Here we go. Here's the big happenings from the past week. Now, keep in mind, there hasn't been a lot per the usual for this time of year. Not a lot of news, but definitely a few things. So, following our topic on last week's episode, if you didn't listen, we talked about unexpected TV cancellations. A few hard-hitting TV cancellations as Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, Clarice, and Manifest all were canceled. Darren Lynn Bousman is returning to horror with The LaLaurie House. Say that three times real fast. From The Conjuring creators, which was a New Orleans house where Madame LaLaurie lived and was an 1800s socialite and serial killer who was never caught. Warner Brothers is developing a new anime movie based on Lord of the Rings and Helm's Deep specifically called The War of the Rohirrim. Rohirrim? Yeah.
The Rohirrim. This is Aaron's normal MO to spell, to pronounce things incorrectly.
How do you say it?
The Rohirrim.
I like my version.
The Riders of Rohan.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways. Ted, the Foulmouthed Teddy Bear, is getting a TV series on Peacock, and Perfect Strangers is getting a reboot on HBO Max with two ladies. Gerard Butler and Marina Baccarin are returning for the sequel, Greenland Migration, and Blacklist star Megan Boone will be leaving the show after 8 seasons, which, of course, deadline broke before the season finale because they're jackasses.
That's really rude, by the way.
That I said that, or that they broke that?
That they broke it. Okay. It's really annoying to me when I, even though I know they have the approval to do it, whenever news outlets do something like that, it just feels like a slap in the face to fans.
Every time. Yep.
I realize that it's because they know they're going to get clicks from it, and that is their ultimate goal, is to draw people in to click on their website links. But it's really frustrating, and quite honestly, I unfollow any organization or outlet that does that kind of stuff.
Well, good luck unfollowing Deadline, because it's one of the most relevant trades out there.
I have, though. Yeah. I'll find it from
have
somewhere
you really?
Else.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. I do. Even if a TV show does something, I'll unfollow it. Like, it really, really turns me off, because I just feel like you could wait 2 days and post this and just wait until the show airs, because now it takes away some of the I don't know, the depth of her absence.
Yeah, the sting.
In this, yeah, skin in the game.
Because we don't know how it's going to play out. You know, we don't know how those episodes are going to wrap up. So to leak that now, to get that out before the series season finale, it's coming back. So it is renewed. It just puts people in the wrong mindset. So the entire final 2 episodes, they're just watching, going, well, what's going to happen to her? Is she going to live? Is she going to die? Is she going to move? Is she going to do what? What's going to happen? You know.
Oh, is this the scene where she is her last scene? Like, the whole time you're thinking about that departure. And that's really frustrating.
So I'm going to be surprising, because of the way I originally positioned myself earlier today on this particular news topic.
Because you sat on it, you thought, you contemplated, you felt.
So to correct something Amanda said, you know, it's not, they did not have approval to post this, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes it even worse.
They tried to block this actually from coming out, and the lady literally sat on it, and then she said, screw it, I'm just going to go with it. So it was truly a deadline move to get the clicks in order to, you know, pump themselves up. So it was really a look at me, look at me, look at me kind of post. And it didn't even have like a comment from Megan Boone. It didn't have a comment from Sony or the bigwigs. It was literally just, I know something that you don't know, and here it is, and blah, blah, blah. However, what this does do is, like they always said, like, there's no such thing as bad press. Just spell my name right. Because now that this news is out there, it's going to get people to come back to the show to find out what's going to happen. Like, how is Liz going to leave the show? Am I going to get answers from people that might have left in season 1 or season 2 might come back for these last 2 episodes and it might reinvigorate the fan base to come and stick around for season 9. So, I mean, there are positives if you look at it from a certain spin perspective. I still think it's a dick move, especially with 2 episodes to go. But at the same time, it might be a positive. There might be a lot more fans coming to check out the show because of it.
Troy, I'm going to say you are an awfully smart man and television is totally your alley, but that is wrong because I am one of those people that left in season 1 or season 2. And knowing this news about Megan Boone frustrates me more. And like, I was waiting, I was like, let's just see how this show concludes, if people are happy or angry, or if they go with a really ridiculous spin, because I followed the Blacklist Exposed podcast that you and Aaron do, and I've gotten podcast. Some of the tidbits.
At least 2 fantastic hosts. Well, at least one very handsome one.
And so
Troy, I'm talking about Troy.
Yeah, of course you are. And so I've kind of just been sitting on it, waiting to get to the show when it concludes. Knowing this actually sets me off. Like, I'm now more inclined to not watch it because I really liked Megan Boone. She was one of the main reasons. I understand James Spader, but Megan Boone was tremendous. And I love her as an actress. Whether you like or dislike her character, that doesn't take away from who she is as an actress and her portrayal of the character. And so she was one of the biggest reasons of the draw in for that show for me. Very sweet. It actually hurts it more for me.
Very.
I could be in the minority.
No, very kind person too. You know, we met her and she's a delight, an absolute delight. So I've got nothing negative to say. It's just sad. You know, to me, I feel like, you know, I don't want to say what Troy or I do or don't know, but we could have done something similar and we choose not to with information that we've had over the years, because I'm a big fan of let it play out on their terms. It's their lives. You know what I mean? It's not, I get you're trying to get clicks and whatnot, but now you're ruining the show for fans in a way. You're affecting that actor's final couple episodes. Like, they're not doing it on their terms. They were she's on it for 8 years. It should be her story to tell. You know, that's what's funny. It's Hollywood's all about, it's your story to tell. You know, it's your story. They're all da, 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 da. But they'll rip it right from you the first chance they get. Just, you know, it's cutthroat. It's
too. And I would like to point out this co-editor-in-chief name who put this story out there. Her name is Nelly Andreeva. So if you see that name, just don't like anything. Yes, I am. I am shaming her publicly on this podcast. Wow. Don't don't retweet, don't do anything with hers. Just leave her be. Don't click on the articles and just stick it to the man or woman in this case.
Okay. Well, I didn't want to go that route.
She's way more upset about it than I was there.
It's just really rude to me. Like,
We got it.
Okay.
We don't need to recycle.
That stuff just really bothers me. Sorry.
If you truly do love Megan Boone, though, I highly recommend checking out The Underground Railroad on Amazon Prime. She's fantastic in it. And I can't wait to see what she actually does for more of the dramatic flair that she has, because that was a really powerful series.
There you go. Boom. I want to talk about, you know, we talked about cancellations last week. Okay. Well, this is like par for the course, because you've got 3 big ones. Clarice, I mean, that's just a show that never found its footing, and they kind of went backwards on the character of Clarice Starling. I don't know how you do that. You have a great character and you basically devolve her. Mm-hmm. So that's your own fault. I don't really
feel bad about that. Yeah, thank you for canceling that, because I did not need that.
Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, I know people love it. Troy, you're a big fan of the first season. You agreed it was time to end it, right?
I don't want to give anything away for people that want to enjoy the second season, because it is a fantastic show and you should watch both seasons. But at the end of the first season, I said, here's exactly how the second season is going to go. Before the second season even aired. And I called every single bit of it, including the way the season 2 ended. I literally was like, son of a bitch, why didn't I put money on the lottery? Because it was literally
There's big Vegas odds on that.
Yeah, huge. because of that, I'm like, it didn't need to go another season, because it didn't need to go another season the first time. It was a great 13-episode story, and they should do like Westworld, where you just wait 2 years until you got a really good story and then film another 13 episodes. You don't have to do the whole make something happen every year, because it really, I think the second season ruined the show, to be quite honest. The first season was magical.
Okay. So that's one that we're okay with going. I mean, you know, there's fans that are upset, and obviously it's always funny whenever the creators or the stars are like, guys, get out there and save our show. Well, of course you're going to say that. That's your job. I understand. Like, I get it.
But then you've got Manifest people were like, whoa.
Yeah, now you got Manifest, which is three seasons in, and this is exactly what we talked about last week. Don't get invested in network sci-fi shows. Got canceled on a cliffhanger, which I think Amanda brought up last week too. Cliffhangers. Grr. I mean, why do you have such a huge cliffhanger in the third season when you don't know if you're renewed yet? It's kind of starting to be annoying. And then I actually get more mad. I thought about this since our last episode. I get more mad, I think, at the creators because they're gambling too much. They're gambling too much. They're banking on if I got a cliffhanger, they're going to have to bring us back. As uh-huh. opposed to let's give it at least a tidy wrap up in case we don't get renewed.
Thank you, Aaron, for agreeing with me from last week.
Yeah, happens every now and again.
So you actually watched all three seasons of Manifest?
I have not watched all three seasons. Oh, okay. I
watched two episodes.
Yeah, garbage. I was out after the first season mid-season break.
Yeah.
Yes, that's about where I fell off as well. I mean, it wasn't a terrible show. It was something that was fine to watch as, you know, something you'd put on while you're like folding laundry or, I don't know, making sandwiches if you're a woman.
That should go on the poster.
Yeah, right?
Here's something to watch while you're folding laundry.
Especially if it's a sci-fi show you got to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. But I mean, it wasn't anything that was outstanding to me. I can see why people are drawn to it because it has all of the drama elements. The thing that perplexes me even more is they just started making a big push for it. It just got onto Netflix, which has been like, it's been leading the charts for.
Yeah,
it
went number one first day out.
Yes, yes. It's been a big hit on Netflix. So there's a possibility that they could save it because they at least know what the downloads and streams are for that television show, whereas things like Prodigal Son, it never hit Netflix, so there's a probably unlikely chance that Netflix would be willing to pick it up. So, I don't know.
But it's already got three seasons, so that means it's already canceled at Netflix as soon as they pick it up, right?
Bravo. All right.
That was funny.
That was funny. I would like to see something built in the contracts or something where if you're on season three or more, you're contractually, like the studio is contractually obligated to finish the story. Give you a 2-hour, if you're canceled movie. After a cliffhanger, you get a 2-hour movie. Like
yeah, just like the Aaron, Timeless. And Timeless was great because of that.
Yeah.
I feel like you're just repeating what I said in last week's episode that you disagreed with me on last week.
I listened, kind of.
Maybe I changed my mind. Maybe I've grown as a person. It's been a long week. You know what I mean? It's been a week.
But no, I agree. I think that would provide some comfort and solace in viewers who I know a lot of people who have just said, I'm not going to watch a show that I'm not immediately drawn into until it finishes and I can see what the ending comes out to. Now, I know that's like a catch-22, but why make that investment if you can't be certain that you're going to get a good ending? Like, right, then you're just setting yourself up for disappointment and frustration, like all of these Manifest fans, because you got into it, you gave your time and your investment, and then they just kind of spit on your face. And they're like, well, that wasn't good enough for us.
Here's what you guys should do. I've got a plan for all you Manifest fans, all 12 of you. So what you do is you go and you find actual airline manifests. Get them printed out, whatever you got to do. Have your own copies of it. And do like the Jericho thing with the nuts and send all these manifests to NBC. Just do it. Just do it. They'll be overrun with paper. And that'll convince them to do a 2-hour finale.
Yes, please destroy the planet while so many places are on fire and different things like that so that you can save your television show.
Yeah, that's what we do, man. Not to mention,
you'll end up being on the new NBC crime drama because you just created a federal offense for sending PII information through the federal mail.
I don't know what you said.
Oh, well then, can you email it? Is it less federal penalty if you just email it?
Nobody's going to be annoyed by email. They're just going to ignore it like we all do. Right?
Automatic delete. Create the rule.
Last thing I want to say, Greenland Migration. The Greenland was a really, I thought it was a great movie. And it's rare that we get a disaster movie where we get to follow the people after the disaster. So I kind of like that. I think that could be interesting. But then again, I don't know where they're going yet. So we'll see. Nobody needs a TED TV show. Just thanks for coming to my TED Talk. That's going to be there. I promise you.
Yeah, of course.
Well, NBC cleaned house, though, it sounds like. Because that was Manifest, Zoe's, and Debris the week before. So what's on their fall schedule? Reality shows?
Timely.
We'll get there. Okay, let's move on. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider. You got to search for it. We're a closed group. And we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Now, before we get to what's next, new today on digital, Pierce Brosnan, leads a star-studded cast in the action-packed, high-stakes heist thriller The Misfits. Also starring Nick Cannon, Tim frickin' Roth, Jamie Chung. A band of modern-day Robin Hoods recruit a renowned thief to help them pull off the heist of the century. Hold on tight for the thrill ride of the summer. Buy or rent The Misfits now on digital and on demand. It's rated R from Paramount Pictures. This looks really fun. Pierce Brosnan is always a fun actor to watch, as well as the rest of the cast. And if you want a chance to win your own digital copy of The Misfits, email us at contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. With the subject line, I'm a misfit, and your name. We'll draw 5 winners and let you know if you won. So there you go. Also, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. If you want to be a Patreon supporter and help the show that you love, then all you got to do is go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And any contests that we have, if you enter, you get an additional entry for every dollar you donate. So there you go. Boom. Now let's go to spoiler-free reviews. First up, the hitman's wife's bodyguard. I think that's it.
The bodyguard Michael Bryce continues his friendship with assassin Darius Kincaid as they try to save Darius's wife, Sonia, who is played by Selma Hayek. So my first question for Aaron is,
Sorry,
does this film rely too much on Hayek being just gorgeous? And she's a talented actress as well. But does it rely on that, or do the other players in the film show up as standouts as well?
Okay, well, that's an interesting question. Anyone that's a longtime listener knows that I absolutely love Salma Hayek. I mean, it's an uncomfortable amount. I think I might leave my wife for her. I'm just saying.
He has a profile. He has a type, and she fits the type.
I'm just
she kind of resembles his wife.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do to reach your goals. That's what I say. All right, so I really hope she doesn't listen to this. Salma Hayek is an equal partner in this one. If you watch the first movie, she's very much kind of a very supporting character. Still has a substantial role, but it's supporting. And here, she really comes to the forefront. She becomes an equal partner, which I thought was great. I mean, it's kind of crazy to see her go as volatile and violent and profane as she does, but she's great. And the thing I said in the last movie was, please, God, give Selma Hayek more to do. And they did. Now, they do over-sexualize her here. Don't get me wrong. I get it. It's a little over the top in places. And that's saying something for a movie like this. But regardless, she is basically on equal footing with Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson. And I thought that was a very nice added benefit. Not just because I think she's amazingly gorgeous, regardless of her age. Everybody's like, for her age? I'm like, for her age, for any age. I don't care what age. She's fantastic looking. And I think she's a fun actress to watch. And it was cool to see her and Antonio Banderas reunited.
Oh, yeah, that's sweet. So I want to talk a little bit about the script, because it seems like one of those movies that you need to take your entire brain out.
The script. That's funny.
Is it as dumb as the title?
It's dumber.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, Antonio Banderas is playing a character called Aristotle Papadopoulos. And his whole plan...
Papadopoulos?
I ain't got time for this. All right? Yeah, that's the name. The whole plan, I'm not even going to go through, because it doesn't make any damn sense. It's like a Bond villain without thought. I think it's just like, let's make him completely over the top. Let's make him absurd. Let's make him outrageous. Let's make him big and huge. And what's the reason? Because, okay, we're going with that. It's bonkers. The plot is nonsensical. Even though Antonio Banderas is fun, the plot is absolutely nonsensical. And they kind of change the characters up a little bit, because Michael Bryce was very, smart, intuitive, intelligent, kind of forthright in the first movie. Here he's like Thor from Thor Ragnarok. He's just a boob. He's literally the most ineffective piece of the action until the last act. So that was a big change in the script. And Samuel L. Jackson's character, he actually had a character in the first film here. I mean, he's coasting so much, you might as well put a drink on his head.
Wow. We just did that dad joke.
I'm kind of proud of that. And Frank Grillo's in the movie and he doesn't do anything. Frank freaking Grillo, who, go watch Boss Level, great movie on Hulu, does no action. Frank Grillo, he's jacked. He's ready to just get kicking some ass and nothing. Just yells a lot.
So my last question to you is about the director, Patrick Hughes, who is the same director who did The Hitman's Bodyguard, so the first one. Neither of these seem to be faring well with critics, but audiences seem to enjoy them. Does Patrick do anything different in this film to try to attract or garner critic appeal? Because it's seeming like maybe he didn't and he just doesn't care.
No, it's very much like the same movie, just retold. And you made Ryan Reynolds a bit boobier, because that's really his character, is just kind of a guy who's going through PTSD and needs therapy, and he lost his license and he wants to get his license back. But yeah, no, the action scenes are pretty similar. They're okay. They're fun for the most part. They're a little generic. Like there's no real memorable set pieces or anything like that, but it's not unlikable. Like, it's enjoyable enough. How's that?
And did you feel differently about the first one? Did you feel like that one was more than just enjoyable enough?
The first movie I felt like had, I feel the first movie I thought was okay, missed a lot of windows for potential. It felt more like, you know, a kid who just learned how to swear, who walks on the playground and just starts cussing at everybody. That's what the first movie felt like. This one feels like they have a little bit more fun. They lean into it a little bit more, but it's still like that 12-year-old kid on the playground with the F-bombs, you know? Which, don't get me wrong, I love a good F-bomb. It's just, sometimes it's like, okay, can we have some character development? Any? I mean, I don't need a lot. I don't. Believe me, I can have I love Fast and Furious movies, and there's like zero plot to that. But you got to give me something, and the characters are pretty, pretty thin.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard?
$5.50. That's, you know, I know people, well, that's low. I think it's a movie that will be fun. You might enjoy it. You will forget everything in it the second you walk out the theater.
Sounds about what I expected.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, if you're looking for a break from the summer heat, or you want to just hear some F-bombs, Samuel Jackson and Ryan Reynolds, you can't really go wrong with those two. I mean, they're definitely not bad. And Salma Hayek gets to be an equal partner, and she's a lot of fun because she kills a lot of people too. Probably more than them, actually. She gets to be the inner Latina, which is fun. All right. Infinite 500 souls have the power to reincarnate themselves into new lives post-death. Within these 500 are two warring factions, the Nihilists and Believers. Their centuries-old battle will determine the fate of the entire world. And Mark Wahlberg is the key. It was directed by Antoine Fuqua. It stars Mark Wahlberg, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Jason Mantzoukas. The Zooks. It's based on the reincarnation papers by D. Eric Mankrantz. So, Troy, this sounds really trippy and headache-inducing. Does the story make sense?
I think your comment about Fast and the Furious specifically applies here, because that's exactly what I thought I was watching for about 25% of the movie. And then I watched The Highlander for another 25%. And then I watched Altered Carbon for 25%. And then I didn't know what the hell was going on.
So you got 25% where you just lost? Huh.
It wasn't that it was lost. It was like, oh my God, are they really going to go here? Because if you love podcasts, people listening right now, you're going to love this movie, because the 25% that I was lost on was all exposition.
Oh,
just
goody.
Talk, explain, talk, explain, talk, explain, because they just didn't have a really good way to weave this together. At the end of the day, the story is actually pretty simple, and I think it's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Foretelling. It was a toll to watch. It was foretelling of what was actually going to happen, because you could pretty much figure out how it was going to end from the minute the jump happened from the start. There's some pretty interesting sequences in here, but for the most part, the exposition was just like, oh my gosh, don't watch this at 11 o'clock at night and try to make sense of it.
The whole story just sounds like we're trying to be clever. Is that how it felt while you're watching it? Like this movie is too generic to try this hard? Or did it feel like, it's a smart movie in here somewhere?
There is a smart movie in there. They had a really good idea behind because these people could basically come back to life. And what did I learn the last time I was alive? And what can I do to make the world better in the next pass, basically? And so they were trying to play off of that concept of this one group, the nihilists. They're basically wanting to destroy the world because they're tired of coming back to life. They want to die.
Oh.
Versus the believers who want to say the world is worth preserving. We can do good things. The more we learn about ourselves, the more we can bring to the world and make the world a better place. So there's a good moral to the concept. Unfortunately, the execution is just really a lot of action, a lot of driving, a lot of stolen right from Fast and the Furious, even the plane dropping the car into the chase. Like, literally, that's where I saw the same effect, Fast and the Furious.
Is there, like, a 27-mile runway somewhere in here?
There is an airplane sequence, absolutely.
Oh, great.
So, I mean, there's a lot of just, like, retreaded stuff. And, of course, Mark Wahlberg trying to explain his inner feelings. I mean, dialogue is just, you know, super stellar. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's a sliver of a really great concept and a really great idea. I would say that it's worth the watch because it is an interesting concept. It wasn't all bad because the action sequences are really freaking fantastic. They do some really great slow motion Zack Snyder type stuff, little Matrix type stuff. So from that perspective, it was thoroughly entertaining. It was just that the script was just, oh my God.
And some of the cinematography and some of the visual aesthetic looks a little Blade Runner-y. Would you agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, very much so. It was, it's very... For taking place in, I would say, near present day, maybe a few years in the future, they did give it a nice futuristic, stylistic feel to the grain of the film. At the same time, it also felt very old because this war that's been going on since 1750, you know, is really like you get a lot of samurai stuff. You get a lot of like old tech at the same time while there's new tech taking place at the same time. So it's a good blend of. Or artistry, I would say, within the course of the film. Like I said, if it wasn't for the exposition, I think the movie's actually not that bad. It was worth watching. I would sit down and have somebody say, yeah, you should watch this. It's good. It's on Paramount Plus. You can stream it. So it's like, it's not like it's that expensive if you already have Paramount Plus. But at the same time, you know, it's a Mark Wahlberg movie. Go in with your eyes open.
Would the exposition be better if he didn't have to deliver a bunch of it?
The thing is he delivered not as much as you would think. A lot of it was actually delivered by Sophie Cookson,
okay.
Who is Roxy from the Kingsman movies.
Okay.
And she's actually pretty decent in the movie, I would say. Jason Mantzoukas, freaking hysterical.
And he's just being himself, I assume, right? Because that's like
totally.
His shtick. Yeah.
He kind of reminds me of, I'm totally going to lose my street cred, but the guy who runs the kind of Pleasure Dome Arena TV anchor from... The Fifth Element. He's kind of like that kind of character.
Like Chris Tucker?
Yeah.
Okay. Has he asked for your multi-pass?
Yeah. So he's like a high Chris Tucker. He's entertaining. So when you get to his part of the movie, it actually makes a lot more sense. And he's got a really great outtake at the end. Chiwetel just is like, I don't know. He just was very one note, very straightforward to play the bad guy. And I was just like, man, I'm not believing you. Like, you're the guy that's going to blow up the world. I'm not scared.
That's too bad. He's actually a pretty good bad guy, typically.
Yeah. I mean, it was just over the top. Mm. I think Mark Wahlberg was a bit more scary bad guy because even the things that Mark Wahlberg's character, Evan, does in the course of the movie, you would think, like, even he might be, like, not on the side of the believers because the whole concept is that he doesn't remember who he is. Like, he's come back to life, but he hasn't had his memory realization kick in yet. So he's trying to discover, like, should I be part of the believers or should I be part of the nihilists? And so he just knows that this guy wants to kick his ass and find this egg. I mean, that's the whole point of the movie is they want to find the egg because the egg is the MacGuffin to blow up the world. And if the nihilists get it, the world ends. And if the believers get it, the world continues.
Interesting.
So it's a race for the Easter egg.
All right, so $10 is the full price of admission. What do you give Infinite?
I'd probably give it $5.50 also. I'm just in that, like, five is like, if it's on streaming, you can watch it. It's watchable. For me, like, six is like in that, maybe I'll rent it kind of thing for $1, $2. But yeah, it's kind of right in that range.
So you agree that this is better ripped from theaters and put on streaming than gone to theaters? I saw the visuals look like it might be really cool to see in a theater. That's why I was
there. Yeah, I mean, like, if I paid $20 to see this in, like, AMC Prime, like the visuals and the sound and everything would have been freaking fantastic. But then I probably would have been really angry at the end because I was like, oh, that's how it ended for $20. All right. I totally saw the ending coming.
Well, there you go. Infinite. It's on Paramount Plus. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Let's talk about reality. And I use air quotes, reality, because it's not real, I don't think, but we'll talk about that in a second. So let's just jump into it. Why do you like or dislike reality shows?
I would say I go on both sides of the spectrum. There are things that I absolutely love, and it's the cattiness of the whole thing, like just the, you know, bitch slapping, you know, total throwdown, like call you names and like who's going to one up the next person. I just think that's fascinating for a short period of time. I also was very thankful that in the writer strike era, back in the last decade, I was super happy that there was stuff to watch on television, thanks to reality TV. It actually opened up a way for some new competition type series, like the food competition series, especially. I thought that was really great. The thing I hate the most, though, on reality shows is when you come back from the break and it's like, okay, before we went to commercial, Joey was doing this and Susie was doing this and Tommy was doing this. It's like, I just watched it, announcer dude. Shut the hell up and just get on with it. That 60-second recap drives me crazy.
You get a recap like right after the commercial break as opposed to episode to episode? Yeah.
Yes. I can't stand it. Oh, and then I just like that anybody that like believes reality TV, I mean, we had the whole Tiger King thing during the pandemic, and it's just like the quality of TV in reality programming just went so downhill towards the end of the writer's strike that I think it made an impact on society in the wrong way possible, that we just became so dumbed down as a culture that when an actual good series like Debris, not that it was the best series, but it was at least a thoughtful, intelligent series, you know, we can't think for ourselves anymore. And those shows get canceled and the reality crap sticks around.
Yeah, I tend to fall fairly opposite to Troy. I tend to hate catty shows. That's the side of this genre that I just cannot stand. I like more of the comedic shows where it feels like you're listening in on friends talking about something. They just make you belly laugh, or something that teaches you something new. But those overly dramatic catty TV shows are like the bane of my existence. I don't understand why we need them, because to Troy's point, I feel like this is how our society has gotten dumbed down a bit, by idolizing scripted reality TV shows where people are just awful to one another. And we're like, yay, I shouldn't say we, because it's not me. We're society, especially Americans, are like, yay, awful people. Why? Why do we want that? I don't want that.
Yeah, what's funny about that is I actually think I get what Troy's saying, because if you look at Twitter or Facebook or anywhere, any social media, what do people love to watch? People getting in fights or getting hurt or just doing something stupid and someone else yelling at them, things like that. Like, people love to watch that. And that's all reality shows are, like those kinds. That's all they are. So I kind of get why people watch them. I don't like them, because that to me just feels like, man, I watch TV to escape, man. I don't want to think about real people having that kind of attitude toward each other. It just doesn't sound fun to me. And also, it's not really real. Like Amanda just said, scripted. They're all scripted to some degree. They're all coached to some degree. None of them are actual reality shows. There's always an influence of some sort. So you're not really getting anything authentically real. I don't like any of them. I like Survivor the first season. I thought that was an interesting show. I kind of dug the first season, and that was also kind of when it was really starting to become a juggernaut. That's probably the show that really made it a juggernaut. I know Real World on MTV was there, but Survivor really kicked it in an overdrive. And after that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm good. I don't need to see this again. And then just like everything became a reality show. They're cheaper to produce. They're easier to create drama, and they're just unbelievable to me. I just don't enjoy them. I want scripted things. I want to think a little bit. I don't want to see my neighbors.
Maybe you two can help me understand this part, though. The thing I don't understand, and this is about myself, is why...
Well, good luck to us.
Those very fictionalized drama shows, I am all about. I love it. But when it comes to drama reality shows, I'm just tapped out. I'm like, I don't want to watch this crap. I'm not here for your drama. But if it's something in a TV show, like, for example, I've been watching Virgin River. The show is not great. I mean, I'm super entertained by it, but it is not a good show by any means. And it's just filled with drama, love triangles, like stuff like that, which exists in reality TV.
Gotcha.
But I can't stand it when it's in the reality TV format. And I haven't been able to figure out what it is between those two types of TV shows that I'm okay with it on one end and I'm totally not okay with it on another.
Well, one's trying to convince you it's real and you know in your brain it's not. So it's probably like you're just fighting yourself in that respect. Like, oh, I just know this is fake and orchestrated and generic. Where here on CW... they're embracing it. You know, they're enjoying it. They're doing their own thing. They're like, oh, I love being hokey and you know, whatever. That's what I would think.
So if I understand you correctly, Amanda, you prefer Lifetime over Bravo.
Yes. I mean, not that I'm really clinging to anything in there, but yes, I would be more inclined to watch something, I guess, on Lifetime or CW, I think is a really great example, than I would something on Bravo. I just can't do that.
Mm-mm. I think the challenge with reality TV too is it's either the sexualization or the overstimulation of the children. Like I think of like the Honey Boo Boos of the world or the Duggars or Octomom or whatever is going on these days. It's like for me, the reality shows I think are more fun when it's the competition type series or maybe the Live Together type series like Big Brother or Road Rules or
Amazing Race is a cool one.
But even the competition shows get a little bit old in the tooth, right? Hey, this is the challenge we did 10 years ago. And it's like, oh my God, then why are we bringing it back? Do something new.
You know what? Let's use that. That's a perfect segue. Let's break down the different kinds of reality shows. Let's talk about that. So thoughts on relationship shows first, like Bachelor and stuff like that, where there's romantic relationships, you know, where you're lining women and men up to be basically a meat parade. What do you think about those, Amanda? Are you on board with...
I didn't like that visual.
That's all it is. That's all it is. That's all parade. It is. You're so on parade.
Here's where I'm at. I've never understood why the same society who would kill their spouse over infidelity is going to grab their popcorn when some mediocre-looking dude is choosing between 12 women at once. It's like, well, we're okay with polyamorous relationships, but it's not really polyamorous. It's just, I'm going to be with all of these women at once until I choose someone to be monogamous with. But now we have all these innate trust issues. So surely this relationship is not going to last. And people enjoy that. And I don't understand why. I feel like you would want to watch something that mirrors your values in some way. And so I always find it really ironic that a lot of the people that... I know that watch these shows are the same people who are like, no, 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 you are with one person. You find that person and you commit to them. You don't go on a train of dating almost a dozen people at once.
Oh, you put me on that show. I'm going to try for everybody. Like that. Oh, that feels like that feels like what it's for, right? Is that for like, well, just find your special one. No, they're trying. Whoever says yes, that's what I'm going for. And that's what they all do.
No, the point is they're supposed to be trying them on like a dress, like an outfit. Like, let's see which one fits best. And then I'm going to marry that person. And it's based off of who applied for the show. It's just so bizarre to me.
It's creepy. I always love when they get engaged at the end of the show. Like, what? Wait, you know, each other for like 6 weeks or something. Really? And, well, I got 12 roses. It must be the one. What? I don't understand this. I hate that show.
I never liked the whole like proposal at the end of the Bachelor or Bachelorette. I thought that was like just give them a prize and set them on a date and then let them do whatever they need to do. I really liked the shows that were more like, oh my gosh, I'm totally going to date myself again. Paradise Hotel. I thought that was a really interesting way to do a relationship show where someone got voted out from the hotel and then a fan who watched the show could basically get themselves onto the show. So you had this like new person and this new energy coming in, like messing up with the whole dynamic of the people that you had watched for the first 3 weeks. I thought that was fascinating, just to see like how people react to new people being in their space. And then I think the CW did one that was called Beauty and the Geek. I think that one was really interesting, to have these, like, you know, gorgeous women and men compared to the nerdy, geeky guys and girls, and like how they were able to like teach each other. Like, this is how the geeky people can up their street cred a little bit. And then, hey, beautiful people, here's how you can have some intelligence so you don't look like just a, you know, model walking down the street and with no brain. So I think those were a lot more interesting from the relationship side of it, because it explored true relationships and how relationships and people actually work in the real world.
Wasn't there one called Paradise Island or something where it was just about banging?
Like, they were that was like the reboot of Paradise Hotel, only Paradise Island was more sexier.
Yeah, it's just like everybody was just trying to do it.
I remember all those MTV ones that they tried once they got rid of music videos, and it was all just these reality shows. And there was one called Parental Control, and it was essentially like they had to go on a date or like an interview with the parents, and then the parents were deciding who they could go on a date with. And I was like,
oh, yes, yes, yes.
What?
Yeah,
like, that's if a my different world. Nobody did well on that. Who is going to be like, yes, you can date my child? I mean, it's heavily scripted, but still. And in those moments, it was fun for casual viewing. It was also when reality TV was really just starting to make its peak, is back in those early aughts, early to mid aughts. But
man, well, speaking of made their peak, let's talk about competition shows. We're talking Survivor, Big Brother, I would put in here, because it's a competition. You're trying to win, right? Amazing Race, shows like that. Do you like these a little bit more? Now, Troy, I know you love Survivor, so why do you like competition shows so much?
I think competition shows, you know, how people progress. Again, I love the human condition, the human dynamic of how people are able to work together and solve problems or not solve problems and get to that cattiness level before they actually figure out how to figure out what they need to all do. At the same time, like, I love the exploration concept, like, especially Amazing Race. Wayne Henderson, who does the Packers Fan podcast and also Remake This Movie Right, was the voice of Remake This Movie Right. He was, we had a really great concept for our audition video, because we had done podcasting together, but never had met in real life. So we were actually going to pitch that we would meet in real life for the first time on the Amazing Race. Oh. And then we went to a Packer game together and blew our gimmick in order to get on the show. But we always, I thought Amazing Race would be fun to do, just because you get to see, you know, all these beautiful places in the world and try all this like interesting food and do all this stuff. And then I actually talked to my cousins. My cousins were Mystica Masala. They were the people on season 12 of the Great Food Truck Race. And then hearing their story about what it's like to actually film competition show. Yeah, it was my cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. So he and his partner is actually dresses in drag. So he's Mystica. And they actually ran a Indian Tex-Mex infused restaurant in Dallas. So they basically took the Indian Tex-Mex food to the food truck and then did, like, you know, tikka masala and chicken tikka sauce and all this other tikka tikka. And it was really fun actually watching them in their element do their thing and just like partner and work with the other teams. But at the same time, you're still in a competition with the other teams. I think those are the reality shows that, even though they're scripted reality and they're scripted game shows in a way, you know, like Shark Tank or Hell's Kitchen or even MasterChef to a degree. I think those are just entertaining because it just shows you the struggle. Here's the aspiring chef who thinks they're good, but they're not good. And they make a really great meal, but then they come down to earth and then they climb up again. I just love the hero's journey portions of those kind of reality shows.
Yeah, I guess those bake-off shows would be competition as well, too, right? Those are a big...
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What about like the home improvement shows? Are those competitions too? Because you're like Property Brothers.
Do-it-yourself stuff?
I wouldn't consider them competition shows, but they're they're obviously a facet of reality television. I think they're just their own.
That's more like a learning sub-genre. Thing. Learning reality, right? Reality learning show? Because you're learning how to do something? Or...
Well, I think we're learning how to do something, right? So we're watching Chip and Joanna, right?
I don't watch these shows. I just wing it. When I put a wall up, I just guess.
There are some of them that are really entertaining, and I do enjoy watching some of those home improvement shows, mostly just for ideas where I'm like, Yes, I love the open floor plan. Do it, that sort of thing. But with competition shows, this is where it peaks for my reality television enjoyment. I really love shows like Forged in Fire. That's one where they're competing to do like a surprise competition of creating a metal object. So sometimes it's a sword, sometimes it's a knife, you know, it changes. And they don't know until they get there of what they're going to be doing, what kind of metals they're going to be working with. And so it really shows how much knowledge that those individuals have to possess. And you see them really under pressure, especially because this building that they're in is like swarmingly hot. Like, people have literally passed out and had medics take them outside or an ambulance take them away because the conditions are just so raw. And that's like another true test that I know I could never survive. And then they take those objects that they've created, those weapons, and they test them out in different ways. And whoever wins, they win money. But then the Forged in Fire show actually keeps those, and it becomes part of like a historical museum sort of thing. That's how they offset being able to do some of this stuff. And I just find that super fascinating because it's something that I would never go on my own to like YouTube and be like, I want to learn how to create a weapon, you know, out of metal. So I get to see these people in their element doing what they like to do. And then I love shows like Nailed It, where people are just really awful at doing something that is complex. I will give them that, but it's hilarious to watch people fail in a funny way, which is kind of sad to say, but
no, that's what everybody watches YouTube for and Facebook videos. I like some reality, very, very, very little reality shows. I don't like most reality simply because it's just not real, like I said earlier. But there's one show that's a competition show called Alone. Which, and also Bear Grylls. I'll watch anything with Bear Grylls. He's just a very fun guy to watch, and he really, really loves like taking people on kind of escapist adventures and also putting their lives on the line. So I love that stuff. But Alone is a show that it's kind of like Survivor, but it's real. You know, you don't have somebody in the background helping negotiate the drama, and you don't have a voting off ceremony. You drop a bunch of people in the middle of nowhere, you got like 10 items, and you either got to live or you tap out or you risk dying. And literally, it's very possible to die or put yourself in serious harm's way. It's the only competition I've ever seen where I actually was enthralled the whole time, minus that first season of Survivor because it was all new. But when I watch this show, I'm like, okay, these people are really, and I'm an avid backpacker, so I know when they're full of crap. You can always tell when these guys, you think you know what you're getting into. You do not. And these people are out like 2 days later or the day after. And then you see people that have lived there for 40 days and they're building an entire fort out of shrubs. I mean, it's a fantastic show to watch. It's just like really cool to see some people have innate survival skills that are much deeper than what's on Survivor. Survivor is kind of generic in that respect. And it's more about the people going against the other people and formulating cliques and trying to use those cliques against each other and that kind of thing. Alone is about, I'm by myself and I have to survive. That's how I win. That's it. I love that concept and how that show plays out because it feels real. It's one of the few reality shows that feels real, that Bear Grylls. Okay. Now we go to the worst offender, my opinion. Real people shows. The Kardashians. Is it the Chrisleys? I just can't stand those people who are there. Real Housewives. Stuff like that. What the Osbournes. I mean, there's been a ton of these. What do you guys think about these types of shows? These real people shows that aren't really real. I mean, the Kardashians, honestly, I'm so mad that they became so, like, they got rich off what, a porn tape? That's really like Kim Kardashian's claim to fame. And they all became super rich just off being hot and self-absorbed. And that just bothers me to my core.
Yeah, when I think of reality television and I think about the worst of it, I agree. It has to be these quote-unquote real people shows. I wouldn't consider any of these people real because there's no authenticity to them. It's just them putting on a persona for what they want the world to see them as. And I don't know. I feel like I just lack so much sympathy for them because I listen to them whining and complaining about their lives. And in some respects, it doesn't matter how much money you have and it doesn't matter how rich you are. You're going to have problems that are going to affect you emotionally and psychologically. I just think it's ridiculous to put those on a television show to people who are struggling to make ends meet and be like, oh, wow, woe is me. And they're like, oh, whoa, I can't buy groceries. So I just have a really hard time sympathizing with them and caring at all about those people. Like, I just don't.
Especially when not 1% of them is real.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, God. It's, you know, I remember like the first year or two, my wife would watch the Kardashians. So I'd be walking to the living room and the show would be on. And for her, in her defense, it was because of the fashion. She loves fashion. So she would be watching because of the fashions that were part of that. But as soon as I would hear it, I had like a Pavlov's response where I just wanted to throw something across the room. I don't know why, but it just made me angry. It just made me visibly angry because I'm like, you are filthy rich off nothing. You've accomplished nothing. I could think of so many people that are trying so hard. They're working super hard. They're trying to make ends meet. They're trying. And all these people did was be hot. That's it. You're pretty. You have no talent, no discernible talent. No. I mean, I will say, you've made a billions of dollars, so I guess there's some talent in that. I guess you can't really say that they have no talent.
Monetizing off their physical assets.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, and creating internal family drama to get rich. So basically, you're profiting off the drama of your own family. And I mean, just everything about it just feels wrong. I mean, if you want to be rich, I guess, and you make it work, that's... You deserve props for that in some respect. Like, I feel like there's something to be said for that. I just don't know. Is that really worth it? I'm sure most people think it is, but I don't get it. I've never wanted money that bad.
I just watched Real Housewives because I wanted to see someone die. So then CSI could come over next door and investigate the murder.
Explain this joke.
Because it's like, you know, CSI New York, CSI LA, CSI Real Housewives of Atlanta, Chicago.
I didn't get it either, Aaron. It's okay.
It's over my pay grade, I guess. Over my pay grade.
Because why did we need another city? Like, they're all plastic. Like, I agree with 100% with what you're saying. It's all because people think that that is what makes the world amazing. Like, if I look pretty, if I look like that person, if I act like that person, I'm going to be rich just like them. And unfortunately, it preys on the people that aren't in that situation and don't have the resources, and it just makes the world a more desperate, sad place to live in because of it. Like, all of that stuff should just be banned, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the thing that really bothers me, is the ramifications, the consequences that have occurred because of TV shows like that and people like the Kardashians, where girls are looking at that because maybe their mom has it on TV and they think that's what beauty is and they think that's what they need to look like to be successful or to be liked or to be adored. And when you're seeing them on television, it must mean that you're successful. It must mean that you're something special. And so the message that it sends to people is just really sad. And I don't know, I think that it really has dampened our security of especially women in our society, because that's what they're looking to. That's what they've had as their peak of what you should look and be like. And it's half of those women don't even understand, especially most of the younger girls don't understand, that these photos and even these videos are so edited where it's not even really what they look like. And if it is what they really look like, it's because they have thousands and millions of dollars to pay for Botox and different things to make them look differently. And that's not something that's aspirational or should be aspirational for the average Joe. So I don't know. It makes me kind of sad, actually.
Well, they've become essentially like America's version of royalty. And you think how sadly you want of that, but it's true, because they're no talent, accomplished a ton, basically just been handed to them. What is the youngest one? Kylie? Is it Kylie?
Yeah, with Jenner, her makeup line.
Yeah, she's just like, she just got everything handed to her because she's from a rich family. And, you know, so she inherited greatness without really having to do anything or actually be anyone. And, you know, it doesn't teach you to work hard or anything else. Just look pretty. And look at Kim Kardashian. The thing that's really kind of sad, she was a beautiful woman. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to take that away from her. Very beautiful woman. And now she's had so much work done because she's trying to maintain this beautiful image. She is hideous to look at now because she's got that never ending obsession with trying to remain youthful or look whatever she looks like. Her mom actually looks better than her now. Like, I don't know how that happened, but it worked out because her mom, I'm sure, is doing plenty of surgery as well. It's just like, it's crazy. It's crazy. The never ending pursuit of vanity that goes through these reality shows.
Yeah. I think even to your point, her sister, Chloe, is that the right one?
Yeah.
The one who made such drastic alterations to herself to try to look more like her sisters, because people were slandering her about being the uglier, quote unquote, fat one of the sisters.
Which isn't cool either. It's not cool.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that obviously had an impact on her. And so now she's had to go out of her way because she feels like she needs to attain that same esteemed level of vanity that her sisters have, that she has to make physical changes to herself just to be sufficient to be part of the family. And I think that is just so incredibly sad. I can't express how sad this stuff makes me.
Yeah. Well, let's go to happier news. Legal shows. These are the last ones we'll talk about for reality.
Are they happy?
Well, I've been on one. So yeah, I was kind of happy. Judge Judy, Divorce Court. These are the shows where they're legal shows. Well, I'll tell you, I've been on Judge Judy. You know, I think you guys know this. I've talked about it. I know on The Blacklist I talked about it. I don't know if I have on this show, but I was a witness on a Judge Judy case. So I got to go. And let me tell you, I was also criminal law. When I went to college, criminal law was my major. There's no law being practiced here. I don't care what what her credentials are. I don't care what kind of judge she is. It feels very less about the law and very more about entertainment. It's just about trying to be entertaining, trying to yell at people, trying to keep it jazzy and snazzy for the people watching at home. You're on a set. Everybody, they don't actually have to pay. So if they lose a case, nobody's actually paying. The show actually pays the person that wins, just so you know. So there you go. Fun fact. The person that loses doesn't actually have to pay a dime. That's why they go on the show, to humiliate themselves so they don't have to pay for whatever this lawsuit is. I mean, it's just, it's a ridiculous, ridiculous thing that I admit I've, you know, People's Court and all that. So I've been a sucker for that in the past. I've watched. I thought Judge Judy would be cool to go to. She's kind of rude, like in person. She's not fun. She's rude, kind of full of herself. But it's just, man, it's not court. It is not court. What do you guys think about legal shows?
Wapner's real though, right?
Yeah, Judge Wapner was 100% real. Yeah, 100%. Oh, you know that because Doug Llewellyn will tell you.
Well, I thought it was because Dustin Hoffman told me, but you know, the thing with the legal shows, and maybe we even like stick Jerry Springer, Maury Povich, that kind of Montel Williams into this category as well.
Just to have somewhere to put them, sure, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, you know, I have a story to tell. Someone needs to believe me. Here's why the story's fake. And because, and I think those shows work just because people are interested in a good story. Not Aaron, because he won't play video games for the story. He just plays it for the action.
It's true. That's true.
But I think that's why I find, like, if I was flipping through channels when you used to flip through channels back in the day, kids, I would always stop on a People's Court or a Divorce Court or Judge Judy type of show just because I wanted to see, like, ooh, what's the case about? You know, I was always fascinated by the cases. Not so much the drama or who won or who lost, but I was like, what did these morons do to be able to get on TV? Like, how stupid do I have to be to get on TV? That's what I always thought when I was a kid. Like, what can I do to get onto Judge Judy? What could I do to get on People's Court?
Just so I could be on TV. Somebody. That's all you got to do. Apparently. And then you get there and then you blow it and you ruin the case for that person you're with. I'm not speaking from experience, but that's pretty much what happened.
You know, I actually feel, again, very differently from Troy. I feel like a lot of these legal shows are just regurgitated family drama shows and stories. If they were more Wicked Court stories, if they were more about the true crime stories that we've become fascinated with nowadays, then I would be more interested. But these catty cases where it's just like, you slept with my husband, and now we don't know. Who the real, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's trying to figure out who the real dad is or whose kid is whose. And why
like
did
those.
You punch my sister in the face, you know, because she slept with her sister or something. I don't know. They're just really weird and bizarre, but they're not intriguing to me. They're more just an annoyance. So I feel like if they were more true crime stories, then I'd be more interested in them. But otherwise... What?
There's a reason why we don't do true crime on this particular episode is because we've done true crime before, so we're leaving that one out. But I want to say, you're talking about the people who are like, oh, the paternity test episodes and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Those crack for me. If I'm flipping the channel, which doesn't happen. Yeah, if that comes on, I don't know why, but I'm always waiting to be like, how's he going to react if it's not his? Because they always, if it is his, they're always like, oh, man, I didn't know. Or if it's not theirs, they always love to throw it in their face and they're like, bam! And they're like, yeah, not my baby. And then roll out of there, like skipping and hopping. And I'm like, well, this poor kid still needs a dad. Like, can we find this kid's dad? God. And they always cut to the poor mom and the kid crying in the corner. I'm like, hey, dad was a player too. So it's not like they're both hose, if that's what you're gonna go
with. Yeah, right. I will say in those circumstances, I do enjoy when they find out that the guy really is the father, and he like just flips his arms up, he throws a chair, he runs off the stage, and then the woman is sitting there click clacking her nails, and she's like, yes honey, I told you,
get the checkbook out, that's my money, right?
Yep. I just think it's like, you're going to have to show up for your kid now. Oh, so sad.
I think Maury just recently had a 20 year later special. I think it was just on one of the streaming services. Like, it was pretty entertaining.
Those were always fun.
Remember when Susie was here 20 years ago and this all happened? Well, we got new information.
Remember, what was it? Was it Morton Downey Jr.? Wasn't that the guy where he would have people fight every freaking episode? Like, they would just be throwing chairs at each other and stuff like that. And I know Springer had it too.
Springer was that way. Yeah.
I think they both did.
And it was just like everybody was sleeping with everybody and da da da. I'm just like, wow. I guess the Kardashians are the natural evolution of Springer, really, when you think about it.
I think there was a Springer episode where the entire thing was the bleep out tone, the entire episode.
I'm sure there's a few of those where sure you couldn't even understand anything. It was just beep, 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 beep.
And Divorce Court, I do kind of love watching that one because I'm just like, what is the appeal? I get like Judge Judy and Judge Brown, Joe Brown and those kinds of shows. Because basically you're going to get sued anyway because these are typically real lawsuits. They're just being solved in a very unreal way. But so you go, and then if you lose, okay, the show pays for it. So I'm not out any money. So that's worth suffering a little bit. But you go to divorce court, like what's the appeal to throwing all your family drama out there? Like, what is the appeal of that? I don't understand that one. That one, I don't like. To me, a divorce, you want to be as under the radar as possible because it's just not good for anybody. Like, it's all bad news across the board. Why do you want to have that aired for the public?
Some people air it to the public because they want somebody to be on their side. They want to be affirmed in their actions and in their methods. And they're like, nah, you're wrong. You're wrong. People are sometimes so blind to their mistakes that they literally see no wrongdoing. And so they're like, yeah, I'll throw you under the bus. I don't care. I'm not going to look bad because I'm not the one who is sleeping with, you know, all the cousins in the neighborhood or something like that. Like, they don't care because it's not their mistake. And they don't often see where they messed up. Like, oh, maybe she cheated because you were beating her face. And she was like, nah, I'm tired of this. So she found solace in someone else.
They really just want to be exhibitionists at the end of the day.
Yeah, people just love to be in front of people. And yeah, I could see that, I guess. Okay, we asked listeners what they thought. So there's a couple I want to mention. Philip Vautner said, I enjoy reality competition shows as opposed to the watching rich people argue shows. Now, I did watch some Osbournes way back, but that was a different time, different and new at the time. Anyway, Big Brother is the only reality show I watch regularly. I didn't really get into it until season 15, which was 8 years ago. Jesus, how old is this show?
There's a lot.
Been watching it ever since. It works for me because there's a goal they're all heading for, 500,000. So there's plotting and backstabbing, stupid competitions, people arguing for real. It's great. Not to mention 24-hour-a-day live feeds, so you can really tell what kind of jerks they are or aren't. I hate to break it to you, but there's scripting going on there, too.
Yeah, the comment, listener comment I enjoyed was from Kyle Nolan, where he said one of his all-time favorites was The Mole because it gave me the audience It gave the audience a chance to try to figure out the overall mystery and the weekly puzzles along with the contestants. I also enjoy The Amazing Race because you get a free tour of the globe. The ones I can't stand are the trashy shows that follow the obviously scripted, quote unquote, real lives of the participants. I do like the puzzles and the mysteries and shows like that where they make you think.
Oh, I like to think.
I totally forgot about The Mole. The Mole is such a great show. I had Mac Herring here. He said, I do enjoy the odd cooking competition shows every now and then, but I used to watch all the ghost hunting shows. I mean, all of them. I don't know if that counts as reality. Most Haunted was my favorite because I love the Brits, especially when they overreact to hearing a disembodied voice.
So what do you think? Does that count?
By the way, Netflix, I just have a great idea. We're going to do a ghost hunting show with British people cooking stuff for the ghosts.
Ooh, so it's like Casper, but reality.
Exactly, yes. Casper's Cakes.
Yeah, oh. I like that. That's actually catchy. That. Yeah.
Do you guys think those kind of ghost hunting shows, stuff like that, would you consider that reality?
I would still consider it a reality show.
Even though ghosts aren't real? What?
That's up to everybody. Yeah.
Bazinga.
I would watch Where You Sleep Tonight, sir.
Do you guys watch them? Do you ever get spooked? Get it?
The Ghost Hunters I thought was really interesting. I just like the interesting places they go. There was actually a guy, it was actually on YouTube. He actually does old theme parks that are still standing, but yet nobody owns or they're like decrepit and stuff. And then he goes into like the old, you know, midways and the games are still there. And like, all of a sudden one of them turns on and it's like, it just, ooh, chills. That's kind of fun.
Lastly, Ty Nelson said something I thought was interesting. There's a fun wrestling themed one on A&E called WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. Basically, wrestlers travel the country looking for things like ring worn gear or props from famous wrestling matches. I despise all reality shows that end in marriage, though. Can't stand them. But this Most Wanted Treasures, I mean, it's
kind of cool.
That's kind of a cool concept. Yeah, I would agree with that. I've never seen it, but it's interesting at least.
It's like Antiques Roadshows for wrestlers.
There you go. And I don't like anything hoarders because that just scares me because I feel like I'm one of them.
I was afraid someone's going to die on one of those.
Like just from suffocation.
Like, go to this house and look at this hoarder and all of a sudden like the whole thing just tips over.
They're on the edge of a cliff and all their stuff just pushes their house into the sea.
And then you got the light for the lighting and then the light catches on fire and the whole place goes up in flames.
Yeah, that feels right.
Think about how much black mold possibly exists in those places.
No. Oh,
God.
I'm having a hard time breathing just thinking about this.
It also gives me thought about the reality shows where the house hunting ones, where they rebuild them. Things like that. Yeah, like
flip or flop.
Yeah, stuff like that. Because I'm like, well, we've only got a budget of $400,000. Like, a budget? That's a house. What are you talking about?
My favorite is when they're like, our budget is $3 million. What do you do for work? I am an Etsy seller, and I sell three things a week. And it's like, sir, what do you do for work? And he's like, I don't. But our budget is $3 million, and we're looking for our forever home. What?
I forever don't understand what I'm doing wrong in life. I need to make a sex tape. That's all it comes down to. I need to make a sex tape. That's how you get rich in America. All right. Upcoming releases. What's coming out soon, people?
The first one is coming to theaters June 18th. It's Summer of 85. While boating, Alexis's boat capsizes and almost drowns before being rescued by David, who ultimately ends up as the friend of his dreams.
Also coming to theaters on June 18th, The Sparks Brothers is a musical odyssey and debut documentary for director Edgar Wright that weaves through five weird and wonderful decades with The Sparks Brothers, celebrating the inspiring legacy of The Sparks, the one rock band that was successful, underrated, hugely influential, and criminally overlooked all at the same time.
Hey, I just want to say, you made fun of me for getting a name wrong earlier. You said inspiring.
I did say inspiring. I was on a roll. I just wasn't.
I'm so inspired. I'm so inspired right now.
I'm glad you caught that.
Well, some more inspiring news because it's coming to theaters and VOD on June 18th. We have The Birthday Cake from director Jimmy Giannopoulos. The Birthday Cake is a mob story that begins at the 10th anniversary of Giovanni's father's death when he brings a cake to the home of his uncle. That day will change Giovanni's life forever. Stars Ewan McGregor, Val Kilmer, and Lorraine Bracco.
look, this could be good or something, but that name and that description just did not sell me.
No, that's a bad title.
And none of those people are like Giovanni. I think Giovanni's played by a no name.
Mm, okay, awesome. So Fast 9 comes out June 25th, which I think is the movie we are all going to be seeing. And that is where Dom yes. Toretto is living the quiet life off the grid with Letty and his son. But they know that danger always lurks just over the peaceful horizon.
What?
This time, that threat forces Dom to confront the sins of his past to save those he loves most in his hashtag family. His crew soon comes together to stop a world-shattering plot by the most skilled assassin and high-performance driver they've ever encountered, Dom's forsaken brother. Hashtag family.
Da, da, da.
Hashtag where's this brother been this entire series?
right.
It's been 45 movies. We got a new brother. We just never talked about family. Wait. So the series is all based entirely about your theme of family, and you never mention this dude? He's forsaken, bro. God. But let's reference Paul Walker 18 times and how he's probably watching the kids just so they can get Jordana Brewster back in this one. Ah, so funny. I can't wait to see that. I can't wait. All right, recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about. Troy, you got anything you want to recommend to people? Check out.
I do. We watched The Guest Book on Hulu. I think this originally aired on TBS, had about 2 seasons. I think it was about 20 to 25 episodes in total. It's from Emmy-winning writer Greg Garcia, who did My Name is Earl. It's basically an anthology series done in single camera about a vacation rental home. And then the visitors actually come to the home and they leave notes for the owner in The Guest Book. You never actually see the owner. And where the townies that the people interact with are repeating characters each episode, they actually have the visitor being a big budget guest star. So they keep the cost down by having the lower budget townies. And then they bring in someone like a Jenna Fisher or a Stockard Channing or Michael Rapaport or Jamie Presley, who was also on My Name is Earl. And I thought it was actually really, the Jenna Fisher episode is actually really, really great. Totally goes into twists that you do not see coming. So I thought it was really interesting. It's called The Guest Book on Hulu.
Amanda, that sounds like something right up your alley.
Yeah. I am going to recommend, and again, not because this is a good show, but just
Is this your weekly streaming recommendation?
No, this is different. This is separate. So Virgin River is on Netflix. The third season is coming in July. This is not a show that is good. I'm going to keep repeating that. However, if you are someone who wants like a modern day soap opera with some pretty decent acting, but storylines that go all over the place, then you will want to check this out. It is short, so you can get through it. And, you know, if you binge it, probably like a week or two. But I enjoyed it. Again, it's entertaining. It's not fantastic.
So if you liked Manifest to do your laundry, then Virgin River is your new stop.
Yeah, right.
Lord. Well, I want to mention this show that I know was really popular on Netflix for a while, but I never got around to it. But a bunch of people told me I got to check it out, So I eventually checked out Behind Her Eyes on Netflix. Limited series. It's only 6 episodes or an hour each. And it follows this woman, Louise, who ends up meeting this guy, David. They hit it off right off the bat. And then she comes to find out he's actually married. And she actually works for this guy. It's a whole bunch of coincidences. But then it becomes, is the wife crazy? Or is the husband crazy? Or is Louise crazy? Is Adele crazy? Like, who is the crazy one? Like, what is going on in this relationship, this trifecta of a relationship? Because Adele, the wife, somehow becomes friends with Louise. And then David and Louise, they still have some sparks, but what's going on with Adele and David? I mean, there's a whole thing going on. This is a very fascinating 6-part series that takes some definite twists and turns. I was able to put it together. I was very proud of myself for that one because I nailed the ending. I actually wrote the whole thing down, folded it like you would in Clue, and I put it on the table. And put my remote on it and told the wife while we were finishing it, I'm like, here's how it ends. I think I figured this whole thing out. Here's how it ends. I was so proud I nailed that. But it does have a crazy, crazy shifting of events as you go. So I would definitely recommend Behind Her Eyes. It was a really fascinating show to watch.
This is like a show that would be in the reign of like You on Netflix. People that would like You would like the show.
Yeah. I know You would like the show. Put it that way. You would like this because you're wondering what's going on most of the time. You're pretty astute at figuring stuff out, so you might figure it out. Manda, you might too. I think you've already seen it though, right, Manda?
Have I?
I think so. Oh. Anyway, maybe you haven't. I don't know. But
sad if you remember what I've seen and I don't remember what I've seen.
I could have swore you mentioned it when it came out, but I could be wrong. But both of you should check this out, and everybody listening should check it out. We've all got like series that are going on 5, 10, 15 freaking years that never end. Well, here's 6 episodes and it's done. Watch it. It's got a...
Yes, cool. I did watch that show. It is wicked. Yeah.
Cool storyline.
We're actually pausing the podcast right now while I add it to my Netflix queue.
Okay, fine. Now we've got every week we have one weekly streaming recommendation. Amanda, what do you want to recommend people check out on any streaming service?
So I'm going to recommend a show that's on HBO Max. You may have heard of it. It's called Made for Love. A woman is on the run after 10 years in a suffocating marriage to a tech billionaire who has implanted a monitoring device in her brain, allowing him to track her, watch her, and know her emotional data as she tries to regain her independence. It is pretty crazy. It's got Kristen Milioti, who is the mother from How I Met Your Mother, and she was also in the recent Palm Springs movie. And it is, it's crazy. Ray Romano has his own sex dummy, and he plays her father. She's trying to escape this really awful Gogol is the name of the company that this man created. Mm. No resemblance.
What's the name of this again?
It's called Made for Love.
Made for Love. All right.
Yeah.
Did you say Ray Romano has a sex dummy?
That's what I heard. This is what I'm like, watch it just so you can see Ray Romano's sex dummy. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. And it's got some comedy lines to it, but it's really just the fascination of how did she get this implanted in her brain? Did she willingly do it? Why is she leaving him now? Is this man more psychotic than it already sounds like he is? And how will she be able to escape someone who can literally see what her brain is seeing, like through her eyes? He can turn on a TV and watch what she's seeing. It's crazy.
That's HBO Max, right? You said?
It is.
HBO Max.
Now, does it end? Like, is there an ending or is it to be continued after? Because I know only one season's out.
Yeah, only one season's out. So I would say just watch this season and keep out for some potential news. But
okay,
it's good. It's worth it.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Okay, Made for Love. All right. Well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. We've got one more thing to get to. Hang on. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can always email us your feedback at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. Tell your friends about the show. You know, with movies coming back out and everything else, there's so many podcasts. Anything you can do to tell your friends about The Hollywood Outsider is greatly appreciated. So please do that. Please share the show. You can find Troy on The Blacklist Exposed and at Troy Heinrichs. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. And me on Presenting Hitchcock and Aaron Smirks. And of course, The Blacklist Exposed. Now to wrap the show up, we're going to our Ho Teachable Minute, which we haven't had in a minute. In 1 minute or less, please relay something you learned recently from any movie or TV show, Troy.
Well, I had the privilege of watching Cruella earlier this week, and then I had another privilege of watching the penultimate episode of season 8 of The Blacklist. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that what you should know is that you are who you are. You've been raised a certain way. You think about life and how you move through life. The number one thing I want to say is trust your gut. Like if you think you have an idea and a concept or something in your head, you know, just don't overanalyze, don't psychoanalyze, don't ask 1,000 people. You already know the answer. Like just go with your gut and stick with your guns. Don't fold, don't cave, don't do whatever you need to do. Just be positive in everything that you want to do in your life. And you could validate, you know, check in with some people and say like, hey, does this sound okay? But like, don't let other people sway your decision. Make sure you stick with what you had originally because it's most likely right.
I feel like this is a very uplifting, upbeat message. I love that. But also kind of feels like you're also being like, bitches, I was right. It feels a little like that.
A little on the nose, Troy.
I'm just saying. I mean, it's what it sounds. It feels like maybe you're thinking about taking a little trip around the globe on a brag tour. I don't know what that would be called.
I think he's already started the tour. I think he's already on it.
The book is half written already. Reality show rights are up for sale.
Well, we'll see if that comes to fruition. But that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for being here. Troy's going to be back with us for a few weeks, I think. So remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
And save it for the credits.
No. No.
Who eat the popcorn while you have it.
Who can make it a whole movie on one bucket of popcorn unless you're by yourself? You can't do it because somebody's going to eat more than they should. Somebody is a greedy son of a bitch. That person's me. I don't understand who makes it to the end credits and why do they hate popcorn?
Because you bought the large because it was free because you're an AMC shareholder and you went to the movie by yourself. And that's just a lot of popcorn to get through in 20 minutes of trailers.
Sure. If you're by yourself, I could see that. I mean, you know, we're not savages, but if you're with someone, that's just no way. Back me up, Amanda.
I almost never finish my popcorn.
What?
That's sacrilegious. I'm
leaving that. Yeah. I have a hard time finishing it. I get full fast on it.
Hmm. I start eating other people's popcorn is what I do. Like, cause they don't do refills right now because of COVID. I'm like, you done with that? You done? Toss it down, brother.
Pass it down.